It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning going to keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time and Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
Manning takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline, and it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Colzine takes the snap.
Pass intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul, and he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now here are your hosts, Lance Meadow and Paul Dottino.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. So glad you could join us. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow, as we take you for the next 60 minutes, breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. Two ways to chime in to the conversation, 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also use Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat, and follow and interact with us both directly. Paul is at Giants WFAN. I am at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. As the Giants coming off their third preseason game, they have two more. It's going to be a quick turnaround. They're going to be going up against the Jets at MetLife Stadium on Friday, and then they will finish off the following Thursday at MetLife Stadium against the Patriots. But let's talk about this Colts game, a 27-26 victory for the Giants, Paul. 27 unanswered points in the second half. We'll get to some of the bright spots in terms of the bench players and the third-tier players, but despite the victory, the biggest concern for the Giants as well as the fan base is you look at the starters, and not just on offense but also on defense, haven't really shown us many consistent, impressive things so far over these first three games.
Well, the things that concern me the most, and I think Tom Coughlin alluded to them in the conference call yesterday, first of all, the offense, especially the passing game, has not gotten on track at all. And you would like to think that after the body of work that they've put on the field, that would be three games. At two, you could say, well, that's not enough to really get a sense. But after three games, to not have had any passing game going at all, it is now a concern, and I stress the word concern because I don't believe panic is the appropriate word. I think concern is the appropriate word, and even Coach would admit to that at this point. The running game, first two games it was good. Not so good the other night, but again, I think over the body of work of 3 weeks, I think the running game we can say is improved or improving. So I don't think his problem lies there. On the other side of the ball, I thought the run defense was okay the other night. Nothing spectacular, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't good. It was just there. The pass defense, however, was cause for a yellow light, because after the first 2 weeks, this secondary had locked down both the Bills and the Steelers passing game very effectively, although there were a lot of penalties.
And there were a lot of penalties in this game, too.
No question.
13.
But I think what we saw, and this land should have been something that all of us should have been more aware of during training camp. We have been praising the Giants secondary as the best unit of the summer. All of us had, universally. But I think the mistake that we made is that we forgot to take into account the quality of the Giants receivers in training camp. I don't think this Giants receiving core matches up to the Colts receiving core. Okay? And especially not in their current condition. The fact that Beckham hasn't been in there. The fact that Randall, for almost a week, had a hamstring problem. The fact that, Manningham is not what Mario Manningham is supposed to be.
And they haven't even been able to use Trendon Holiday either.
Correct. So this receiving core is not nearly what we thought it was going to be going into training camp. And yet, as we watched the Giants secondary in practice, we kept marveling at how great they were doing. Well, you know what? Wake-up call. They did that against the Bills receivers. They did that pretty good against the Steelers receivers. They've been doing it against the Giants receivers for the better part of a month. But when they went up against a better receiving core, like the Colts and Andrew Luck, throwing the rock, they had some trouble. Now, is that a red flag? No. Not a sign of panic. Maybe it's just a yellow light that says, warning, They still got some work to do. This was the first real test that they had, and they kind of stubbed their toe a little bit. Okay, let's just reevaluate, refocus, and see if we can get those guys coached up to the next level for the next time they face a better passing game than they have in recent vintage. That's what I thought about the defensive side, and I think that Tom Coughlin was probably surprised and disappointed that the secondary was not nearly as effective as it had been when it jumped up a level to face Andrew Luck and company.
And Andrew Luck also hurt them in terms of the mobility department. He extended a lot of plays, was rushing out of the pocket. They weren't necessarily well-disciplined in getting over to their spots. When you talk about the secondary, I agree. I think that, you know, sometimes we boasted them a little too much before ever seeing them in a game. But the one, at least if you're going to hone in on an individual, the one concern for me, Walter Thurmond. Sometimes out of position, penalties, you know, these are a little troubling trends that we're seeing, not just in one game, but now a few games.
I don't know that I would point a finger at him because in a lot of instances, Lance, especially with the slot corner, you're not 100% sure exactly what his responsibility is. It's a lot easier to tell the responsibility of a corner on the outside than it is the slot guy, because sometimes they've got different assignments that we're not aware about. It's not just as easy as lining up against that other guy and playing a man-to-man. Sometimes there are trade-offs and switch-offs and brackets and zones. It's not just always every time getting that guy's face. If that was the case, I would say to you, well, there were too many plays made against him. I'm not sure that that's the case. That would require some more investigation with the plays that were called and the scheme. But I would say this, referring to your Andrew Luck comment, one thing is quite clear through the first 3 weeks of this preseason. The Giants need to get a better pass rush. And it really wasn't there in these first three games like it needs to be. Now, I've had comments made to me on Twitter, people asking about JPP. He's a different case. I'm not grading JPP on his tackles or his sacks right now. What I'm grading JPP on is his physical athleticism. And I had to explain this to someone on Twitter last night. And then even George Wilson, the New York Post, chimed in and said, oh, he was horrible, trying to answer someone who would question me about JPP. That's not what I'm looking for right now. And let me explain to you why. JPP is an incredible athlete. We have seen over the last 2 years, when he's kind of got nicks and bruises and banged up and he's not well, when he's physically not capable of being the athlete that he knows he is, it not only affects him physically because he can't make the moves that he needs to make, and he's a cat-like, quick athlete, it affects him mentally. JPP is a guy who, when he's not able to do what he knows he can do, it starts messing with his mind, and he starts doubting himself, and it hurts his confidence, and it then creates a domino effect on how poorly he plays. What I've seen from JPP in this camp and in these three preseason games is that his athleticism seems to be back. I'm seeing the quickness. I'm seeing the fluidity again in his movements. To me, for a guy who basically hasn't been himself for 2 years because of injuries, that's the test that I'm putting on him. I'm looking for his athleticism, his quickness, and his movements. Right now, I'm not concerned with the sacks or the tackles or the hits he's making. What I want to see is, how well is he moving? Is he moving like the guy we know he can be? Now that we've established that, and I really believe that could take a whole preseason before he really gets it, that, you know what, I am back. Even though he talks a good game and says he's 110%.
You can only read into that so much.
Right, Lance? Yeah. Come on, you and I know athletes. They're always going to talk it up. But until you see them actually execute and believe in themselves with their actions, it's not true. I see the athleticism. I think he sees it on tape now. And after three games, I'm willing to say that I think JPP is on track and has a chance to become a really good player again. Only he can tell you that through his actions once he starts to execute and produce when the regular season begins. But for the time being, he has passed my test of showing me that he's got athleticism again. And that's what I want fans to understand. if you're just looking at it and saying, why isn't he getting sacks, you're looking at this all wrong.
Well, sacks is a misleading statistic anyway. I think quarterback hits is a more telling statistic. People get caught up in the sack numbers, and I thought he had a few good rushes in this last game. There was even opportunities when Cullen Jenkins, if you recall, and Kiwi were a fraction of a second away from getting a sack as well.
That's more troubling to me than the fact that JPP's not putting up numbers. The fact that the other guys on the line are within a half a second, or a half a step, if you will, of getting the sack. Because, as I said to Jonathan Hankins on the post-game radio afterwards, you guys have had a bunch of those already in these first three games, and that's not good enough. We've seen what happens when you're a half a second too short in getting there. You pay. You lose. That's bad. You got to find a way to make up that half a second. And the other guys on that line are not making it up yet. That's more troubling to me than JPP's lack of tackles or sacks or quarterback hits.
It'll be interesting to see what the lineup is like moving forward, because there were a few injuries on defense that I want to note. Prince Amukamara, strained groin, getting an MRI. They're going to wait and see what happens. Supposedly he was still feeling soreness the day after the game. Wasn't much of a difference. Marcus Kuhn has an elbow injury that he's dealing with. And then you look at, on the offensive side, Charles Brown left with a shoulder injury. He backed up Will Beattie in this game. We'll get to Beattie in a second. And then the most disturbing one is Cooper Taylor, who's had some bright spots during the preseason, a toe injury. And Tom Coughlin said it's one that's going to take some time. So he's probably not going to be out there in the preseason moving forward, Paul.
You'd have to believe he's an IR candidate, even though Tom would not go that far to say it. You'd have to think it's in play. To me, that now creates a new mathematic for the roster. Because if you're going to keep four safeties, now Berhe is now in play. And we haven't seen as much of him as I would have liked. And so maybe this is an opportunity for the last two preseason games to see him get more snaps, to figure out if he indeed belongs on the 53. But the other situation you mentioned about Prince also creates a numbers game now at corner. Because if he's gimpy, now yes, you have Thurman who could move outside. You have McBride who could play inside or outside. You've got guys. But on the back of the depth chart now, do you have to keep another corner? Because you can't get caught short. And we've seen the Giants caught short at cornerback in the past. Does this mean that at the back end of that cornerback depth chart, a guy like Charles James, who you could probably say is somewhat on the bubble, now does it solidify his spot? Or are they saying we're going to go with the four safeties? Maybe Berhe does enough to keep a job. And do they skimp and take one less corner because now they feel they got to have another safety? You know, three safeties or four? Six corners, five. How many receivers do you keep when you haven't really had five receivers take this thing by the throat and say, I deserve a spot on the 53. You really don't have that yet. So what do you do, Lance?
Well, and you have to protect yourself with respect to Odell Beckham Jr., who has yet to get in a preseason game. They're optimistic it's going to happen Friday night, but you have to at least have an insurance policy in place. So I think that they'll probably play the conservative route and keep an additional safety or a corner or a wide receiver, especially if they're plagued by injuries at that position. Another thing I'll throw out related to the corner spot, a lot of people have been reaching out to me on Twitter and saying J'Ron Hosley's not worth keeping. Well, if Prince is banged up, of course you keep J'Ron Hosley. You put him on the suspended list, and then week five, you then ultimately make a decision whether or not you want to open up a roster spot for him. You don't have to make a decision once the season starts. So you store him on the suspended list. Why lose a guy that knows the system? It makes no sense, especially if you don't know somebody could go down in week two and week three, and then you're really going to need Hosley in terms of the numbers game.
There is no question in my mind, and this is a horrible thing to say because it's a negative. But it truly is a silver lining for the Giants because they now have the opportunity, as you just alluded to circumvent the 53 with a corner who knows their system and is going to be able to come back in a very short period of time if they wind up needing one. Again, it's a negative. Please, folks, don't misunderstand. I'm not happy for J'Ron Hosley or for this organization that they've got to go through this. But in a very roundabout way, there is a roster crunch that creates a silver lining with this.
Real quickly before we get to the lines, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll also get to your tweets. Will Beaty, by far, Paul, the biggest storyline entering this game. He made his preseason debut. He was out there for a little bit. Other than the holding penalty, I thought he held his own, and I think it was a big step in the right direction.
He got a little more than a dozen snaps. I think it was 14 or 15 when I counted it the other night. I had him down for 4 negative plays. Now, that was the grade that I gave him based on my live eyewitness account from watching on the sidelines. If folks have rewatched the game tape off the TV, or for that matter, the coaches, and I'm sure the coaches have, they may have graded it differently. But from my amateur eye, from the sideline, I had him down for 4 negative plays out of, I think it was 15, including the penalties. So, to be honest with you, on the basis that this was his first game action in a year,
you'll take it.
Am I excited? No, but I'm saying, okay, that was sample number one. Okay, move on. Let's go to sample number two, you know?
It's unfortunate the Colts didn't have Robert Mathis. It would have been nice to see him go up against one of the best pass rushers in the NFL.
That would have been unfair, though. See, I believe that throwing him out there in his first game action of the year against a premier pass rusher, you pretty much knew that was going to be not good, okay?
Well, it would have been a very quick test. We'll leave it at that.
It would have been like asking a fifth grader to pass high school senior calculus. It would not have been appropriate. I personally believe that that would have been a very weighted test and would have resulted in a lot of people automatically dismissing Beaty as a disaster and not being on track. I think that would have been very, 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 very unfair. The fact that he went up against just a veteran NFL player, Warner's been in the league a couple of years, not a rookie, been in the league a couple of years. I thought that was fair, and I thought he did okay.
Now, with respect to the other side of the offensive line, the right side had some breakdowns. Eli Manning was sacked off a Justin Pugh mishap.
Schwartz, I thought. Jeff Schwartz and Mosley. Schwartz on one from the left guard spot, Mosley from the right guard spot, I thought was a little bit more responsible. Pugh could have helped, but I thought that Mosley was more responsible on that play. Either way, both Mosley and Schwartz, I must say, to my eye, have been inconsistent during this preseason. And that's more disappointing with Schwartz because he's a veteran who has had some track record of being a really good blocker, especially with the run. Mosley, here's what I want to caution people about Mosley. Mosley has dramatically improved from the player he has been for the first 2 years of his career, especially when he missed the first year because of injury. Dramatically improved. He's now, to me, at the very least, a competent backup who deserved the opportunity to challenge for the starting job in training camp. I personally believe, after what we saw now in Game 3 and the inconsistencies the first couple of weeks, I'm still praising him for his improvement. And I do believe he deserved to be in the competition. Right now, as Tom Coughlin alluded to in the call yesterday, that there may be some changes along the line, I think it's time for Richburg to now be inserted into that lineup at right guard, because I do believe he's one of the best 5 offensive linemen on this team.
He's the most versatile by far.
So I think it's time for now him to get the shot in the last 2 preseason games to see if he can be more consistent than Mosley and be the guy opening day against Detroit. Now, Schwartz at left guard is a little bit more of a problem because it's his inconsistencies that we've seen now through 3 games because of a balky knee, because we know he's had an achy knee.
Soreness there, yeah.
Is that the reason why he doesn't look as fluid as he should? And if that's the case, then you don't worry about it that much, because then you don't play him much in the preseason games. You rest him up. You get him healthy for Detroit, and everything's fine. Or is something else there that's not right with him? Because the truth of the matter is, they really don't have a backup left guard. You really don't want to put Brewer out there. You really don't want to put Jerry out there. Richburg is your best backup guard. And if you're going to put him in at center, at the right guard, you can't back up Schwartz with him. So between Richburg, Schwartz, and Mosley, they have to have 2 starters. That's the bottom line.
And Richburg, see, you want him to start if he's your best offensive lineman, but at the same time, he can back up 3 spots as opposed to the other guys if you have them come off the bench. So, it's somewhat of a numbers game. You at least have to look at it from that perspective.
No question. And I think that the one thing that you have to add here as well about Pugh, and look, He was an all-NFL rookie tackle last year, and deservedly so. I have people sending me messages now because they've seen that, you know, he's had some missed assignments in the preseason. Oh, he's overrated. Oh, we shouldn't count on him. All of a sudden, everybody wants to crush this guy. And it's like, what are you talking about? He was an all-rookie NFL tackle. He got what he deserved. He played well, especially for a rookie. This is year number two. You know what, folks? He's still going to make some mistakes.
Absolutely. It's a learning curve.
Okay? He's not a six-year pro. He's a two-year pro. He will still make some mistakes. Get that. And we've also told you, at least I have, for 5,000 times, he would be an all-pro guard. But he's out of position, okay, because the Giants need him at tackle. I think he is a good NFL tackle and will continue to be a good NFL tackle. He would be a Pro Bowl right guard, but they just can't afford to move him in there right now.
Right now it's a priority to have him on right tackle because certainly they got question marks in the interior. They can't afford to mix around with him. All right, let's open up these phone lines.
Can I breathe now?
Are you ready? I hope that you can breathe. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Kicking it off, Kashawn in Maryland. Kashawn, what's happening?
Hello?
Kashawn, are you there? All right, we will move along. Let's try Phil in New Jersey. Phil, what's happening? All right, Phil, hang up. All right, we're off to a great start here. Ari in Highland. Ari, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How we doing, Ari? What you got?
I'm all right. Yeah, you had a problem with the phones. The volume had cut up, so I had to call back. But anyway, I wanted to be the first caller anyway, because before the whole negativity starts, I wanted to start it off on a positive note. Yeah, you can be a little concerned about the offense, but I'm really not very nervous right now at all. I'm pretty happy with you know, the way the defensive side of the ball played against what I think is going to be one of the top, you know, two or three offenses in the NFL this year. You know, you're looking at, I think, one of the two best receiving corps in the NFL, either them or the Dolphins, with Nick's, Reggie Wayne, T.Y. Hilton. I mean, T.Y. Hilton, when he was number one, was fantastic. So, you know, the defense, they kept them out of the end zone, except for the play with the except for the drive with the fumble recovery from the kickoff.
With Quindon Dempsey.
Right,
you're talking about, yeah.
Fumbles.
Well, I mean, the other thing to keep in mind, they did keep him out of the end zone, but to me what was troubling was there were a lot of lengthy drives, meaning they weren't able to get the key stop on third down. You're talking about the Colts had a 9-play drive, a 10-play drive, and a 14-play drive,
yes.
And
right.
It was milking a tremendous amount of clock.
Right. A few penalties were thrown in there, too, which did not help.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there was an early third down that we stopped them. They called the holding penalty, and you know, they're going to do that, so we got to get used to it. But, you know, you can't be concerned off a preseason game for that. We held them. The other thing is the offense, yeah, we know they're bad right now. But, you know, first off, people have to, you know, he sees things on Twitter. People are talking about, oh, get rid of Gli, you know, think of him. In the first game, he was 6 for 7 or whatever it was, you know. You know, he had a really bad game against who I believe is supposed to be, from everything I've heard, supposed to be a top defense, Indy defense. And it's not like they're throwing the ball every down. They're, you know, you see it. It's you know, two runs and a pass, and you know he's passing from 36, 37. The first play of the game, I think it was a pass. It was a bad pass by Eli, a little low, but it's still a catchable ball. It was nice to see Cruz get that deep catch that got called back because of the penalty, and there was also setting him fumble it, but it looks like a beautiful pass. I think give the offense some time to gel, and they'll be fine. And the beauty is that this defense will be very good once it gels, once Ethan comes back, and once we get a second pass rusher to step up, either Ayers or Kiwanuka or more. Once one of them steps up, we're going to be fine because the defense will keep us in ball games, and the offense will click at some point. The O line needs to gel. They have been thrown together. They have not played together at all. And, you know, they need some time to adjust. The other thing I'm really happy about is the fact that this team is winning games. I think it's going to breed, they're 3-0 now. They're going to breed, a championship, not necessarily a championship, but they're going to breed, you know, a They're going to have a locker room of winners, which I think is a great thing to have going into week one of the season.
Well, it's certainly nice to have that confidence factor, and Ari, appreciate the phone call, but at the end of the day, your starters are going to be out there in the third and fourth quarters, and that's the team that you want to get the W's. You're not necessarily going to be relying on those final players that were in on those final drives.
Yeah, that is true. I do want to address the Eli thing, Lance, because here it is, the first call we took, and obviously Eli came up, and that's no surprise. Let's face it, all right? The last couple of games, it's just not been very good. The whole passing game has been very discombobulated. But here's what I really want to say about that. It's so easy to point the finger at the quarterback, but I have to tell you, I do believe that there are a number of factors, once again, that have contributed to this. First of all, the receivers as a whole are not nearly as consistent or playing it at the high level that we thought that they would be playing at. That is certainly part of the problem. Timing is another part of the problem. And I laugh when I see people, you know, blitz me on Twitter about Eli's inaccuracies again. You know, so many times a pass that goes awry is a badly thrown ball. Fine. So many other times that a pass goes awry, it's because the route was run wrong or the timing of the route was wrong. They're not always because the quarterback misfired. And, look, I'm not here to tell you what percentage is what, because I'd have to talk to the coaching staff and find out exactly what went wrong on each one of the throws that were thrown. I'm not going to do that. But what I will tell you is this is not all on Eli's inaccuracies. This is not all on Eli can't move. This is not all on Eli can't run this style of offense. It's preposterous to think that. But, you know, people like to make blank statements. They love to panic. They love to get all upset. I get that. Everybody wants immediate results. That's why fans are fans. But that's not what's happening here, okay? What I suspect is happening is we've got a combination of an inconsistent rebuilding offensive line, which we've told you about for months was going to be a work in progress. We're talking about a receiving core that to this point in the preseason has underachieved and been very inconsistent. And we're talking about an entirely new offensive scheme that, yes, the quarterback is trying to get familiar with and making sure that all of the guys on the field with him are on the same page and timing it exactly how it's supposed to be. Remember, a West Coast offense, or a West Coast style of offense, if you will, relies more on timing than the old Kevin Gilbride offense. And so, when you have 11 guys on the field and they are not all exactly on the same page timing-wise, because as we've all told you, the pace of the game changes when you're in practice or when you're in a real game. Even though these are preseason games, the pace of the game changes. The tempo of everything changes. And when you have 11 guys who all have to be on a split second worth of a clock, they all got to be right on. Things like this happen. Things get ugly. Things look bad. I've told you for months not to expect much out of this offense in the preseason. This may take into game three or four of the regular season before this offense puts up 28 points. Okay? Relax, people. Tom Coughlin said one thing the other day, and I do want to allude to this, Lance. I know you want to get in here, and I'm sorry, but I got so many rants built up over the last 48 hours. One other thing is, when Tom Coughlin alludes to the fact that they had some breakdowns with some of the calls that they were going to use against the Colts the other night, that's not because they game planned for the Colts. Okay, I've had people come at me on Twitter for this too. Oh, you said that Eli's not using, you know, the real plays or the game plan plays in these preseason games, and that we're not seeing things. Oh, but Tom Coughlin said that they had missed some things. Here's what the Giants did. Okay, let's clarify. They know that in certain situations, there's going to be an obvious blitz by the opposing defense in a preseason game. Now, they're not game planning specifically for those opponents, but what they are doing, they're putting in certain blitz adjustments to their offensive line and with their quarterback to say, okay, listen, we're not giving you the full McGee here. This is not the full playbook, but what we are doing is, when you do see a blitz, we're going to give you some simplified choices to work off of. Because let's face it, we don't necessarily want you to go out there see the blitz, and get yourself killed. I mean, we want to be safe about this. So there are certain protections and calls and adjustments, very basic ones, that have been put in.
Subtle
just
ones, yeah.
Yes, just to prevent your quarterback from getting injured, supposedly. That's what Tom Coughlin is talking about. That those types of adjustments, those very simplistic adjustments, not game plan stuff, but simplistic adjustments that you could do on site, those things did not work out well. And that's what we're talking about. The premise that we presented to you last week still holds true. You have seen very little of this playbook. We have seen more of it than you have by watching practice every day. Please understand that, people. Please. It's important that you do, because you're getting yourself far too upset. There's reason to be concerned, not reason to panic.
The other thing that I'll add in terms of the ups and downs for at least the first-team offensive starters, Will Beattie, I thought, picked up on a key point after the game, Paul, when he was talking about the fact that, you know, this is the first time he's out there playing next to Jeff Schwartz. And during practice, yes, he's going next to Jeff Schwartz, but everything's scripted in practice. They know where the blitzes are coming. They know what the defensive scheme is. You go out there in a game, you don't know what's coming your way. So it's an adjustment period. This was the first time Will Beattie was out there, the first time he played next to Jeff Schwartz in a game situation. Once again, concern that the offensive line is not consistent? Yes. But to panic when it was the first opportunity that Jeff Schwartz and Will Beattie had an opportunity to play next to each other, you know, that to me is taking it miles and miles and stretching it, the level of concern, at least at this point.
I think part of the problem here, Lance, and part of the overreaction is because the Giants were very ugly during last year's preseason, especially offensively. And look what happened.
It carried over to the regular season.
0-6.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people are still, if not consciously, subconsciously reliving that horror show. And they're now saying, oh, my goodness, they're looking bad. They're looking disaster. Help, help. That, I think that's part of what's happening here and why we're seeing more panic than is necessary.
However, I would argue the difference between the two preseasons, and I mean, yes, there were some injuries last year, but this year I think they have much more severe injuries, meaning gameplay, game changers that have not been in the lineup. I mean, Beattie's playing for the first time. Tremaine McBride's playing for the first time. Odell Beckham hasn't even seen a preseason snap. Last year, at least, Eli had some of his receivers out there in the preseason.
Yeah.
So there's somewhat of a level of concern. This year, we really have yet to see the full platter is what I'm getting at.
And quite frankly, and don't get me wrong, he's not a main cog in this offense, but, you know, Peyton Hillis is going to help these guys, too. If he can get healthy and make the team, he's got to get back on the field.
Well, they need him in the pass protection
department.
Because
yes.
Speaking of pass protection and the concepts, Andre Williams missed big time on a pass protection assignment.
He had one good one and one really bad one.
The learning curve of a rookie, but that's why you need some insurance. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. He's Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could join us for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Dominic is in Pennsylvania. Dominic, what's happening? Dominic, you got to lower your computer. We'll come back to you. Let's go to Marco in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hi.
Hello, Marco. What you got?
Well, a lot of things are coming to mind now. You know, just a couple points I want to get to because I do want to talk about the offense. I think it's right. It's concern, not panic, Paul, but the frustration. And you just alluded to this when I, a few seconds ago, the frustration. Like, and Lance, you said, well, Beattie knew playing with Schwartz, and we have a new offense, and we still have to have some patience with. You know, and now you talk about Beckham, too, hasn't been on the field. You guys know this better than I do. When things like this happen in the preseason, you know, we could be talking at some point in the mid-year, and we could be looking back. It's like, oh, well, why is the team struggling? Well, if you remember, these things were happening in the preseason, and they never were able to gel. So I guess what I'm getting, and I think about Adrian Robinson, too, how we always talked about, oh, well, he was in school at Cincinnati, and he couldn't catch up in time. You know, these guys have a set amount of time that they could be practicing together. So I was definitely, and I'm a pretty optimistic Giants fan. I don't hit the panic button. I'm definitely frustrated because it does leak over from last year, but it also, I'm starting to think about, you know, if Beckham doesn't get on the field, or he is on the field, but, you know, if these things don't happen quicker than they need to, you could be looking at an 0-win whatever start to the season. This team the other night, this first-team offense, looked like a team that could get steamrolled by Detroit in that first game in the season. So my question for you guys is this. What's without panicking, what's too early to tell, and then what's not too early to tell? So what are you seeing that you say, oh, yeah, that is a problem? Or what are you looking at and saying, that's okay? Because I'm not sure. We played a Colts in the season. So is McAdoo not showing everything? I mean, I could keep going, guys, but I'm alarmed when Eli's passes aren't crisp. And I'm not talking about routes, and I'm not talking about the offense. I'm just talking about a spiral. I'm concerned about Victor. I'm concerned. Where's Ruben Randle? So tell me about what I'm missing and what actually is a concern.
Well, I think the easiest way to explain this is that when you don't have all of your parts and you're working with a lot of backups and you're working with a lot of makeshift situations, you have to immediately lower your expectations and say, okay, look, we know that this, and this aren't right, and they will have domino effects on a lot of other things as well. So it's very, very difficult to give a legitimate, fair judgment at this point in time based on the guys who the Giants have had to work with at key spots. So you ask me, when is it too early or too late? I'm telling you, I believe after the first two preseason games, it's way too early to make any kind of judgments at all. After three, we now can start forming certain opinions. I will say this. It's clear to me Ryan Nassib is the number two quarterback. Okay?
I agree.
I'll give you that opinion right now. Okay? That I can give you because I've seen enough out of him in different situations, good and bad, that say he has progressed enough where he can be the number two. That's one I can give you. I can't give you an opinion about the offensive line because that truly is a work in progress. And, in fact, they're probably going to change one of the pieces this week in terms of Richburg getting into the starting lineup. So it's unfair for me to say what is this offensive line other than a work in progress, which clearly needs to be improved. I can say to you, Andre Williams looks like the real thing, okay, in terms of him running the ball. I think I've seen enough of that to say Andre Williams is going to be very, very good. But again, that's because it's compartmentalized. That's just one player, and we see when he touches the ball, he does things with it. And he knows what he's doing with it. So it's easy to grade. So if you get what I'm saying, you want me to pick apart the offense and say, well, make a generic statement. When should you be concerned? When should you not? I don't think it's that simple. I really believe you have to break it down into individual components and say, okay, what are you okay with? What are you not okay with? What do you have to be understandable about? And then how does that affect other things? And so what I'm telling you is, Lance mentions the fact that, you know, Beckham hasn't been out here at all. And remember, he's the guy they brought in with the 12th pick to be the deep threat. He's supposed to be the guy who brings back to the Giants passing attack what Mario Manningham gave them a few years ago. And it's clear now that Manningham can't do it like he used to do when he was with the Giants the first time around. You know what I mean? Now,
I do.
So that's why it's really a very complicated answer. There's not an easy answer here. You just have to hear. Intro Rule has a great statement, and I know I'm going long with you, but I apologize. This is important. Intro Rule has a great statement. Intro Rule says, believe what you see. Now, the educated eye looks at each one of these components, understands the big picture, and also understands how to focus on the individual components. Then, if you believe what you see, you can make some sort of judgment as to not only where they stand, but where the big picture stands. If you don't believe what you see, if you allow your emotions to take you into other directions, now you start painting broad brush pictures, which can be very dangerous. And so I hearken back to his statement, believe what you see, because Corey Washington has made, I think, everybody a believer.
Three straight games he scored the game-winning touchdown.
I think we know he can play receiver in this league.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Oh, yeah.
Even though he's done it against third and fourth stringers in the fourth quarter of games. I think we know he can play in this league. So believe what you see. And other things that are not quite crystal clear, that are foggy, understand that, guess what? The five Giants offensive linemen that we've seen in the first three preseason games, well, opening day against Detroit, you're going to see Beedy probably at left tackle unless he has a setback. He has not played in all of the preseason games. You'll probably see Richburg starting at right guard in that game. He has not been the full-time starting right guard in three preseason games. So is it really fair to just blanket the offensive line and say, oh, they can't do it, when you haven't seen the finished product?
No, but Paul, and I'll hang up after this, but this is what I have to say to that. This upcoming preseason game against the Jets,
yeah,
you guys know how important it is for the starters. They're going to play a significant more amount of time.
Probably a full half.
Now, I don't want to see the starting offensive line and Eli playing a full half against New England in that last game because we still need to see a little bit more. Because that's always been the game where let's let these guys that are trying to make the back end of the roster, let's let them play here.
Yeah, but my friend, you might have to.
That's kind of what I mean.
But Marco, considering it's a new offense,
is really going to paint a picture.
Marco, I don't mean to cut you off, but considering it's a new offense. Marco. All right. Marco, appreciate the phone call. It's hard to get a word in. Considering it's a new offense, you have to make the exception this year more so than other years that
exactly.
You have to play your starters in the fifth game. So I understand there's the concern about the injuries, Paul, but, I mean, you may have to get them out there for a few series, and there's no crime in that, especially if – think about it. If Odell Beckham Jr. makes his debut against the Jets – I want to see him out there against the Patriots.
Yes.
What do you want to do then? Just wait for him to come and play against the Lions? If Richburg gets the start against the Jets, Paul, I want to see him in the starting group against the Patriots.
Exactly.
You can't wait and say, oh, we've seen one game, now we'll hold them back for the Lions game. No, got to build some continuity.
We said weeks ago, Lance, that unlike other preseasons where you were just looking to figure out the back end of the depth chart, there were a number of starting issues, especially because of the scheme on offense that the Giants had to solve. You just said it great. There's no crime in that. There is absolutely no crime in that. Where does it say you have to play all of your backups in the final preseason game?
There's no rule that says that.
The Bill Belichick rule is that, but guess what? That doesn't apply here.
Well, the funny part is, remember we were talking all offseason, Paul, all the fans were calling up, and everybody was saying, oh, this is a great year to have five preseason games because you have a new offense.
Well, I felt that way.
So what do you want to do? You want to just now throw away the fifth game? There's a reason why you have the fifth game. You got to use it. Take advantage of it.
So many fans were afraid about the injury factor, and I understand that, but I think anybody who really understood exactly what the Giants' task was going to be appreciated the extra snaps.
201-939-4513. Let's head back to the phones. Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe, good morning. What's happening? What you got? Joe, are you there? Joe is a man of very few words this morning. All right, moving along. Let's go to Drew in Virginia. Drew, what's happening?
Guys, good morning.
Good morning,
Hi.
Joe. What you got?
Hey, first and foremost, man, first things first, based on the games that, hello?
I hear you. Well, we lost Drew here. I don't know if it's our end or your end. We'll continue to move along. Let's go to Derek in Atlanta. Derek, what's happening?
Morning, guys. How's it going today?
Hi.
Doing well, Derek. What you got?
Hey, you know, I just wanted to say, overall, I'm kind of really disappointed in the way Eli Manning is playing right now. I mean, when I was looking at the game, the first thing I started noticing when he was in is that, I mean, he's still throwing off his back leg. I mean, he is still rushing throws and looking panicked. I mean, he doesn't look seasoned right now and for somebody that's been in the league this long. I mean, I was looking at Alex Smith last night, and, you know, I'm not comparing Eli to Alex Smith, but I just seen the way when he got rushed and the way he still made throws, you know, accurately to his targets. And Eli right now is just not doing that, and it's concerning.
Want to take into account that the Chiefs did not overhaul their entire offense during the offseason.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
This is not a problem that started with this overhaul of the offense. And
well, sure it has. Look at Eli's career. Eli's career is going to send him to Canton, Ohio. It's not like this guy, you know, people talk about him sometimes as if he's Randy Johnson. And I know you old folks out there understand who I'm talking about, the Giants quarterback in the early 70s. That's not who he is. He's not Joe Pizarcik, okay? I'm going to go a little more recent. He's not Dave Brown. He's not Kent Graham. He's Eli Manning, okay? Guy's got to chill out.
I think the other thing to take into consideration.
So, Paul, what you're saying is that looking at – I'm sorry, Lance, I'm going to cut you off. But, Paul, looking at that film on that he put out there Sunday, I mean, well, this weekend, you weren't concerned about the way he looked in the offense.
What I'm saying to you is this. Right now, this offense is discombobulated for a number of reasons. Perhaps part of it is Eli's discomfort with it, which he still has to grow into. Part of it is the fact that the timing is not right and not cohesive amongst the 11 players who are on the field when he's out there with the starters. Part of it is that the receivers clearly are not playing up to par and getting open and doing what they're supposed to do to help him out. And when you take that stuff into consideration, you say to yourself, it's only 3 preseason games. If this was week 5 of the regular season, week 10 of the regular season, then I would say to you, my friend, you're 1,000% right. This is a horrible season that Eli Manning's having. They are in deep, deep trouble, and they're not going to climb out of it. But I'm not prepared to say that week 3 of the preseason. And the other thing I have to say to you, and I mean this, when you've been around the game as long as I have, and you see a guy like Eli Manning who works his butt off, studies his butt off. The guy takes his playbook into the men's room, okay? That's how hard this guy studies and works. This guy is like the studier to the nth degree. You don't discard that. You say to yourself,
Lance,
wow.
Lance, when you're looking at this, Lance, don't you think you should see some progression, even if it is not – it seems like we're going backwards.
Well, but he was pressured all of last season, and that's why he was somewhat uncomfortable, and we've seen that all over again. So, I mean, I think part of his discomfort is the fact that he hasn't had a great deal of time to throw, and I think it was Marco who called in earlier. I mean, that was a great pass to Victor Cruz for 51 yards. I mean, we're really getting crazy over, you know, every short pass to Victor Cruz here or there. How about that deep ball? I mean, that was precise. Was that not, Derek?
I mean, it was precise, but, you know...
But he can't do that according to
the
Eli bashers don't think he can make that throw.
Well, Derek, listen, are there things that are still shaky? Absolutely. Eli Manning would be the first one to admit that. But you were bringing up Alex Smith off the top. And listen, I'm not interested in comparing quarterbacks. We could do that all year and all throughout the course of the season. But Alex Smith, I think, is a little bit more comfortable running out of the pocket and has a little bit more versatility and mobility. So when you see Alex Smith do that, Eli Manning's not going to do that because he's not as smooth as a mobile quarterback. So it's hard to use Alex Smith as even a comparison.
No, it's not. I mean, I'm not talking about running and scrambling. I'm just talking about quarterbacks who know the blitz is coming and still stand in and make their throw, step into their throws, or make accurate throws under pressure. And I just don't see Eli doing that right now. But I'll move on because I wanted to get another point in. Corey Washington, you know, I really like what he's doing, and I'm officially off of the Jarrell Jernigan bandwagon, and it just seems like we need to get that spot to Corey Washington.
Well, see, now we're talking about something we all agree on.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. I'm going to give you a little boost here about Corey Washington. Tom Coughlin says that, you know, back-end receivers, which Washington is at the moment, need to produce on special teams. And with Corey Washington, since he's not going to return stuff, he's got to be able to help out the coverage teams. Well, did you know the other day, and I don't know if you could see it on the TV, but he was in on 4 punt coverages in Indianapolis. On all 4 of them, he beat a double team and was the first guy down the field. And that bodes really well for him. I guarantee you the coaches gave him a big thumbs up for that. Now, unfortunately, he didn't make any of those tackles, but the fact that he hustled his butt off and got down there and was in on the kick coverage and provided some pursuit and pressure, that's good. That's what they need to see out of him to guarantee a roster spot.
Yeah, I'm glad that hopefully that he's basically solidified. I think Victor Cruz with a couple of good games, you know, also made the roster that way. I just got one more thing to say is that since you talked about punt coverage and punt, how does 51 make it down the field and make the tackle every time?
Isn't he amazing?
That is amazing. I'm like, how every time the guy's on the ground, the guy getting off him is 51, how does he snap the ball and beat everybody down the field?
The one thing I get is that he was a linebacker at trade in college, so I know he likes to hit people, and I know he likes to seek out the ball. I get all that, but you are 1,000% correct. Zach Diassi is not the fastest guy in the world. He's not the most elusive or the most athletic, and yet there he is in the middle of that traffic, snapping the ball and hustling his butt downfield. And if he is not their best special teams cover guy, I don't know who is. This guy is incredible. He really is.
And I just wanted, hopefully everybody notices that, you know. I don't know how come he doesn't make more Pro Bowls.
He's been to two, right?
To guys. Yeah.
All right, Derek.
I'll talk to you guys
You
tomorrow.
Got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We're getting some tweets in here about the whole Eli Manning, which we knew was going to start, given the fact that he's just 1-for-9 for 6 yards over the last two games. And Andrew at Big Blue Viator writes in a few notes, says, all we saw Eli do is roll out and go for the deep ball. You cannot live and die by the deep ball. See 2012 and 2013. Let's not forget, he's dumped it off to the running backs in the last few preseason games, and that's a big component of the West Coast offense. So, I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist as a quarterback to be able to decide to dump it off to Rashad Jennings or some of the other running backs. And I think we've gotten a taste of that over the preseason games. Haven't necessarily seen much of that in the last game. But to say that all Eli's going to be doing is relying on the deep ball, I don't know if we've seen enough of the preseason to even come to that conclusion. So that, to me, is really stretching it a little too far, and you're looking more so at the last few seasons than you are potentially of what is in play for this season. Running backs are going to get involved in the passing game, Paul. It's not just going to be about the home run, and it's not just going to be about the middle pass. They're going to try to get these running backs out into the open space.
Well, let me ask you a very simple question. You've watched a lot of practice, and you certainly have seen the preseason games. Tell these folks, as I've been telling them, about how different this offense looks and how different the plays look in practice as opposed to the preseason games. I mean, how many times have you seen Eli dump off passes to the backs
all the time
in the three preseason games? Not really.
Not much in the three preseason games.
But we
but
see
practice,
it here.
It's all the time.
We see it here.
Nonstop.
Folks, trust me, okay? Please. I know it's hard. Trust me. You're seeing a lot of stuff out there in these preseason games that it's just not going to be. We're seeing more of it here at the facility every day. If you've been out here, do me a favor. If you've been out here watching practice more than at least once to the Giants facility in the last month, those are the people that I want to hear from. Those are the people who I'd like to get on the phone and tell the rest of your fellow fans the different stuff that you've seen out here. Because I think a lot of people, they just watch the preseason games and they don't believe it.
And you can only take so much away from the preseason.
It's not their fault. They're not here. If you're not here, you don't see it. You know, you just got to take our word for it.
Correct. If they don't have access to come or flexibility, I mean,
the problem is there is so much polarization in this regard. There are either those people who are now too nonchalant about everything that's happening because it's, you know, excuse me, it's too incomprehensible for them. And then there are other people who are just furious about what's happening, and they just want to panic and blow everything up.
Well, and I understand the reason they're furious is the Giants are coming off a very mediocre season. It's understandable.
I said before, I think that plays a part in this.
Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that just because there's ups and downs in three preseason games, it's going to be a continuation of that 0-6 start last year.
Remember, folks, Steve Spagnuolo, new defensive coordinator, first 2 weeks of the regular season, they were the worst defense in the history of the NFL. Week 3, turned around against the Redskins, and somehow at the end of the season, they won a Super Bowl. Holy smokes.
And the other thing to note, we're not trying to make excuses for everybody on the team, and neither is the coaching staff, because Ben McAdoo spoke earlier this week, and he was extremely upfront with the media, Paul. He said, we got a lot of work to do before that Lions
going
game.
Straight
there
they
are
do.
Some issues. He didn't say, oh, everything's rosy. We're going to get Odell Beckham Jr. back. It's going to click. He was upfront that he said, we have conversations every day about what we need to do better, because there are issues, and that includes Eli Manning and includes everybody else on this offense. And he sees it, and that's the most important person that needs to see it.
And you know, the funniest part about this, Lance, and you know, I get the Twitter messages, too, a lot of times. Oh, you know, you're apologizing for Eli, you're defending Eli, or you're doing this. It's hysterical. I don't think the people who want to throw darts understand or listen to the criticisms that we actually put forth on this program. We're very frank. We're very honest. We're telling you what the real truth is what we're telling you here. And, you know, look, I get it. Football is a complicated game in some ways, and it takes an awful lot of study and an awful lot of learning to truly understand. All I'm saying to you folks is I see the ugliness too. That was probably the worst three quarters of preseason football that I've ever seen. It was dreadful.
They didn't
have
a first down in the third quarter. I know that was the backups. They still didn't get a first down.
You know, it was absolutely horrible. I see that. I believed what I saw. I saw it. It was terrible. But please, don't be so superficial. You know, don't be. Peel back the layers of the onion. Get to the root of the situation. And that's what we're trying to do for you here. We're trying to tell you what is wrong, why it's wrong, if there's hope to fix it, or if there are things that can be. We've told you now for months that the left tackle position was reliant on Will Beatty getting it done. We've told you for months that the tight end position was, cross your fingers, they may not have their starting tight end till opening day because somebody may pop free on the waiver wire. We've told you these things. For God's sakes, just listen. You know? Just listen.
201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. We'll try Drew again in Virginia. Drew, what's happening?
Hey, man, good morning. First and foremost, man, you guys are having problems with your phone, so that's what's happening.
All right, well, we are trying to work out the kinks. So far, it's been smooth on the last few, so let's hope it works for you. So what do you got for us, Drew?
Okay, so, you know, out of three games, this is what I have. Pros, zero, scrubs, two, okay? The backups have been doing, you know, the three and four guys have been winning the games while the pros have won nothing. So, you know, let's keep that in mind. The other thing I want to say, and I want to get back to something you said last night, I agree with you, which is these guys need all of the on-field practice they can get, including the preseason games. So this notion that we should hold back the starters is a bit ludicrous, especially after you said, given that this is a new offense and we have a new thing. Yeah, these guys need all the work in the world, and that was rather evident in Game 3. I mean, the game against the Colts, that was ridiculous. Lance, you know I'm a huge Eli fan. You know that, and I've defended Eli left and right. But I looked at, you know, when he was in there, he looked to be rushing a little bit. And he looked to be rushing a little bit. And a little panicky to me, which was, you know, somewhat surprising to me. You know, I know he got sacked, and then after that, he's kind of looked a little jittery. Can you speak on that real quick, man? What are you seeing? And Paul, I'll take your answer too, since I know you was at the game. And I got all the questions, but let me ask about that. Eli looked a little jittery. He looked like he was rushing his passes.
I don't know that Eli looked jittery as much as he looked very uncomfortable. I think that's the word I would use.
But
again, without having access to the coach's room, and neither one of us do, we can't go in there and talk to Coach McAdoo and say, okay, look, we know that Eli looked like this. Was it more because he was uncomfortable with the play selection? Was it more because he was uncomfortable with the adjustments? Was it more because he didn't trust his offensive line? Was it more because he didn't trust his receivers? There is so much right now that is discombobulated with that first-team offense. I think even though he's the quarterback, it is unfair to put the burden of it on him. I do think that there are many factors here.
Right, and as Lance will tell you, I'm a huge Eli fan, and I do look at the game, you know, objectively. And, yes, no, it is not strictly Eli. However, my point, my question was, and I'm just specifically in this.
He looked uncomfortable, yes.
Right, I am pointing specifically to Eli in this case, but I do understand, you know, because, you know, which gets my other point, yeah, the offensive line didn't look that great either. And once again, it looked like the left side was breaking down. So this team, you know, looking at this, man, this team is not ready for prime time. Now, yes, I'm not one that's going to panic and this and that and everything else. However, I am very realistic. And looking at this team now after Game 3, the first team need a lot of work. As far as the defense, yeah, they got lit up by you know, by a good offensive team and Andrew Luck and boys, And, you know, that's a bit concerning. But, you know, I guess at the end of the day, it was that one game. And we can just go from there. But the overall big concern is in game three, the team just simply did not look for ready for prime time. Now, once again, you know, the scrubs got out there. And when I say scrubs, I don't mean to denigrate these guys. I use the word scrubs to make a point, okay? Because, you know, we are going to call these guys scrubs and this and that. But those guys went out there and played their butt off.
Yeah, they did. Coach was happy about it, too. Very proud of them, I might add.
Right.
You know, Joe, I want to add one thing, though. You know, this week against the Jets, obviously we believe that Beattie's going to be at left tackle. I don't think he's had any setbacks. At least nobody indicated that to me. So I'm assuming he starts at left tackle. There's certainly a hint that Richburg may start this week at practice at right guard. So that may wind up being the Giants' starting five against the Lions. We may see that for the first time against the Jets on Saturday. We also expect to see Beckham for the first time all camp against the Jets on Saturday. And so this may truly be the first time in the entire summer that we've seen the lineup that the Giants put out on the field against the Lions opening day on the field at either practice or in a preseason game. So I would say to you, of everything you've seen so far, put a little more emphasis in what you see against the Jets on Friday night than you have in the first three preseason games.
Well, we will definitely be looking forward to that, you know.
And I'm not telling you they're going to be great, but at least now we may have the components to look at. You know what I'm saying?
Well, right, I understand that. And, again, I understand that. But, you know, again, my concern is after game three, this team just simply does not look ready.
They're not.
Now, yes, I understand that in the Jets game, you know, hopefully things will be worked out. But I got to tell you right now, I did listen to Coach Coughlin after the game, and he was not a happy camper as well.
No,
nor should he be.
The last thing I want to say, because I know all the callers are waiting, I just want to say this. I'm not so sure that I'm going to necessarily pencil Nassib in as the number two. I still think that Painter is playing well enough, and I still think this book is open. That's all I have, man.
Okay.
Have a good day.
All right, Drew, appreciate the phone call.
Good phone call.
Absolutely. Some good points brought up by Drew. I would somewhat agree with Drew. It's interesting, Paul, when you look at how those two quarterbacks have performed. Painter had a great drive against the Steelers to close out the game. Nassib did the same thing against their last opponent, the Indianapolis Colts. I would say Nassib was a little bit more impressive than Painter in this last game, even though Painter played a little bit more. But, you know, I mean, if you're ranking it, if you're putting a chart, they both have two impressive closing drives. I mean, you have to take into consideration practice. But, you know, Nassib, with his decision-making, it's been up and down, especially when he faces pressure. So I don't know if Nassib has necessarily locked it up as maybe others make it out to be.
There's no doubt in my mind that over the last 3 weeks at practice, Nassib has had an edge over Painter. And obviously consider the other stuff as well. He was a draft pick, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely.
You know, to me, it's his – right now, he definitely has more than a razor-thin edge over Painter in my mind. And unless he falls on his face, I think he's going to be the two.
201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Good morning. Just to follow up on that, can Nassib go to the practice squad if he could make it through it?
No.
No? Not eligible this year?
No.
No? Too many years, is that what it is?
He was last year, even though he did not play, he was on the roster. He was active for the entire season. I don't think he is eligible. And quite frankly...
I'm going to try to look it up to see
quite
how
frankly,
many games.
Here's the problem, okay? He's done enough... He's not going to sneak through.
Yeah, I don't think
I mean,
so.
Even if you think you can do it, and I'm telling you, I don't believe he's eligible, he's never going to get through. He's shown enough now that he's a competent player.
Right, right, right. He's improved 100% since last year, and if he keeps at that, right, somebody will grab him. So probably the Giants will have to take him. But Painter throws a nice ball, and he looks steady too, but, but Nassib has more – I think to show because he's such a younger player. There.
Well, you'd like to believe he has a lot more upside because Painter's been in the NFL for a few years, and you pretty much know what he is. You still want to believe that Nassib has a lot of potential that has been untapped.
Yeah, he's he's 100% improved. If he continues, wow, he'll be good.
He's a lot better than he looked last year in practice, I'll tell you that. Dramatically
right.
improved.
Right. Yeah, I think the defensive backs there, I think you got to give Luck a lot of credit. He's one of the toughest ones. He throws a good ball, and he can really extend that play stepping up in there. And that's where I think, you know, that's game planning. And the Giants' offense has to get going to help with that stuff, too. He's going to give everybody a fit, Luck, I think, there, Paul. But I want to give kudos to Robinson, too. He showed finally what he could do, and he could
two
really
nice catches on that final drive.
I mean, getting down the field like that, and, I mean, Nassib really threw some darts. And,
he did.
I mean, I have to give credit to him. I just think the Giants have the weapons. They're going to have to put this all together. Eli's going to have to get into a rhythm, which he hasn't yet. And, they showed they have the talent. With the running backs and the receivers and the tight ends, I think so. And the offensive line, but it's all going to have to come together, and that's a big if, I guess. So, but they showed a lot of talent, I think, the Giants. So hopefully they can get it together. So that's all.
All right, Joe, appreciate the phone call, and he's right. A number of weapons stepped up on that final drive. Travis Harvey made a catch, Adrian Robinson, Corey Washington. A number of guys on this depth chart are taking full advantage of their opportunities, and that's what you like to see late in games. You want to see these guys take advantage of their opportunities. Got to put something down on film to sell themselves to the coaching staff.
You know, right now my biggest question amongst the receivers is still the further development of Reuben Randle. I know what Victor Cruz is. Honestly, I don't care that he hasn't caught a ball in the preseason. I know what he is. He's already shown it to me for a couple of Pro Bowl seasons. What I don't know is what is Reuben Randle? Is Reuben Randle going to continue to develop and take that next step to become a consistent, bona fide starter in this league who produces? Or is he still going to be that inconsistent guy last year who makes you shake your head because he wound up making a play, or should I say didn't make a play, that led to an interception?
Or coughs up the football when he's about to go into the end zone. Number of examples. He has the games where he'll give you two touchdowns, Paul, and then he'll have the games where the mental mishaps.
We have not seen enough evidence to indicate that he's taken the next step.
Piggybacking off of Joe's question, I looked it up. Nassib was actually inactive for all 16 games last year. So that.
Yeah, but he
means,
was on the 53.
But the fact that the practice squad rules has to do with inactive versus active, I think he will be eligible. I agree with you. He's probably not going to go through waivers anyway.
So we think he is eligible.
I'm gonna clarify. We were talking about this last week. I got to bring up the practice squad rules, but I think it has more to do with active versus inactive.
I'll tell you what. Let's deal with that tomorrow because we're running out of time. We only got 5 more minutes left on this program, and then we'll get back to it tomorrow, and we'll let you know.
Let's go back to the lines. Matthew is in Ocean. Matthew, what's happening?
Do you think Corey Washington is going to take first-team reps with the Giants, with like Eli?
I was actually surprised, Paul, that he didn't get in earlier in the game this past contest.
So was I.
I thought they would have wanted to test him with different quarterbacks in different corners. I was very surprised by that.
My only flip side take on that is perhaps they already think they've seen enough of him as a receiver, and they think that he's got what it takes to be on the roster, and maybe they felt, hey, it's time we get to see these other guys because we haven't seen enough of them in game situations, and we've already seen that Washington can produce in a game situation. I mean, did anybody like really drop their jaw in shock the other night when he did it for the third week in a row? He'd already shown you twice that he could do it.
And that he can make adjustments. I think that's the most impressive thing. Regardless of whether it's against a third stringer or a first stringer, Paul, he's adjusting his body. He's reading the defense. That, to me, stands out more so than even making the catch.
All 3 touchdown catches were of a different variety. And in each one of the 3, he had to use appropriate technique to go get the ball. And you're absolutely right, Lance. You could not have hit it more on the head. He proved that fundamentally and also inside, guts-wise, he wants that ball and he knows how to get it.
All right, Matt, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for tuning in. We don't have to wait till next week. I just looked it up. Player is eligible for the practice squad if he does not have an accrued season of NFL experience. Players gain an accrued season by being on the active roster for at least 6 games. So he has not gotten an accrued season.
So he is not.
So he is eligible to go on the
practice squad.
So
even though he was on the 53 because he was not active for any of those games,
he
is still capable of being shipped. Well, it's not going to happen, though.
Well, because he's probably going to get claimed through waivers.
He would get claimed.
And the
no
other
way.
Big question that has been brought up was Kendall Gaskins versus Michael Cox, and we've talked about this in case you're tuning in for the first time. Gaskins eligible for the practice squad, Michael Cox not.
Correct.
And those things need to be taken into consideration when you determine who you want to put on the 53 and who maybe you have a chance to salvage.
Yeah. No doubt.
All right. Well, good stuff off the phones. Good stuff on Twitter. Any tweets that we didn't get to address on the program, we'll try to address them off the air. We'll be on each and every weekday this week, 9:30 a.m. Eastern, here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And there is a game this week, Giants-Jets in the MetLife Bowl coming your way Friday night. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Appreciate everybody tuning in. We'll speak to you tomorrow morning. Have a good one.